IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello, welcome to this episode where Arushi Kataria and I, Sridhar Krishna, will talk about emigration and how India could be a great candidate to fill the world's vacancies. We've seen that, you know, India has got, I think this is all part of our overall scheme of things where we're talking about the need for creating 20 million jobs in India. And we said earlier that, you know, there are 18 million people who go past the age of 18 every year in India, which means that, and then we have a large number of people in agriculture, way more than we probably require there, which unless we create more than 20 million jobs a year, this crisis is not going to go away and India cannot have a hope of getting out of poverty in real terms and inequality, all that. And I think, so it's critical. But all the jobs need not be created in India itself, right? I think historically people have gone to where the jobs are or gone to where like there is, and like people when they were leaving Africa probably, I mean, they went in search of fast new areas for pasture, right? You run out of like grass in one hill, you go to the next one and so on and you keep going further. And very often people have also like, you know, emigrated in order to run away from conflict. But I think like, you know, running away, but emigrating in order to find better paying jobs in other parts of the world is good, is a win-win for everybody concerned. And I think we should look at that as a serious idea and talk about it a little more. Arushi, we were talking a little while earlier when I was telling you that I was reading about this, the trend of international migration having gone up over the last few decades and currently estimated at almost 272 million people globally. And out of that, 2/3 of them are labor migrants, right? So this figure remains a very small percentage of the world's population. It's only about 3.5%, right? Meaning that the vast majority of people are still residing in the country in which they were born. But this 3.5%, and if we can make that number go up a little bit, without it should give a whole lot of benefit to everybody. I mean, India can benefit from this quite significantly. While I was doing some research, I found out that there are probably like, you know, between some top 5-6 countries like Japan, Finland, etc., there are probably like 4.5 million jobs that go unfilled every year. And like, you know, India can easily play a good role and fill some of those vacancies. What are your thoughts from this? What do you think? Do you want to tell us something about the history of immigration? How has immigration happened over time? And what's good about immigration?
So I think to answer your first question about the trends of immigration itself, the annual rate of change in international migration has been increasing. So while it was around 1.5% between 1990 and 2005, that number shot up to almost 3% between 2005 and 2019, which means that the proportion of people that are migrating out of their own countries is increasing. And it must also be noted that a lot of this migration has been happening to high-income countries, which means that people that are immigrating are going to get better jobs, hopefully. So now going back to your question about what is the history of immigration? Why have people historically left the country that they were born in? It's had a lot of reasons. The first being that, you know, you're running away from conflict, which is something we see very often here. That conflict is known to cause a lot of problems like poverty. You're caught in this self-perpetuating cycle of being caught in violence, not being engaged in productive activity. And you are looking for better opportunities, not just for yourself, but also probably your family. So you want to go to a country that isn't marred with violence, where you're not, you know, fearful for your life not existing the next day. This is something we see especially in areas that are, you know, marred with civil conflict or terrorist organizations like the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The second reason that has encouraged migration of people, at least in the age when agriculture was a very important factor, was looking for more pastoral land where they could grow. They could grow grains. They could, you know, keep their they could keep livestock, and they could earn a lot of money out of it. After that, I think one significant reason more recently has been education. There are a couple of countries across the world that have renowned educational institutions that provide a brilliant return on investment, or as we like to call it, return on education. So people are migrating to those countries because that's not just where colleges are, but also where jobs are. And as usual, people will migrate for purposes of trade when we're looking for better opportunities, because we are rational human beings. If we feel that we could get we could get a better payoff from doing this particular action, we're more likely to undertake that action in very game theory terms. So better opportunity, better quality of life. And well, mm-hmm. as someone who's grown up in India, away from the, you know, disapproving looks of aunts would be a good enough reason to migrate.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure your aunt's listening. But having said that, I think I agree with you, right? I think, like, you know, I think the other thing that probably people migrate for, even during the Ice Age and so on, has been weather, right? So weather also forces people to leave where they've been living traditionally and move to new places. And then some of us, like, you know, I moved from Chennai to Bangalore. So way better weather. But to be more serious, I think it's also, I think the benefits of migration itself, whether is good. I'm not saying it's just emigration is good or immigration is good. I'm talking about migration itself being very good. Because as people from different places get together, it leads to improved skills, right? So some people bring in certain skills, it combines with the local skills which are there, and it becomes, it is a great synergy, and it leads to improved skills. There's greater innovation when people come from diverse backgrounds in different areas. So there's innovation. And I think diversity leads to a better world. I think pluralism is a great thing. The idea that you want to have a world in which everybody just looks like you, talks like you, speaks and even prays like you. I think it's a very, I think it's served its purpose and it's done. But really, it's much better when you are unafraid of the other and enjoy diversity and look at pluralism as something desirable, not even as something that you just have to put up with, right? It should be something that's seen as a desirable thing. I would hate to live in a ghetto, whether it be a ghetto of people who just look like me, talk like me, or like, you know, a place where it's of somebody other than me, right? I think I love living in places which are cosmopolitan and neighborhoods which are mixed, neighborhoods where, like, you know, all kinds of people walk the streets and there are all types of flavors emanating from people's homes. I think I enjoy that. But for many other people, it might not be the case. And I think that's another big, but I see it as a plus, while some people might see it as a negative. The other aspect of it is just right. It's only right that people migrate. Because when you look at anybody, I mean, people will go where the jobs are. And jobs will go where people are, right? I mean, that's how it works. So sometimes, I mean, if you, what are these jobs are for people to do, right? And why would you have jobs going unfilled in some places while people go starving in another? It just seems wrong for it to be any other way. So people should go where the jobs are. And sometimes it's possible to take the jobs to where the people are, but not always. Sometimes people just have to go. So I think that's something that should be done. The other thing is there's increase in productivity. I think there's competition. People are, like, you know, bringing in new skills, etc. All that leads to better competition. And all this leads to, like, I think you mentioned this the other day when we were talking about how it also leads to diversification of the economy and expansion of the economy. New migrants need to. So it's beneficial to everyone, to the nation, like India, which might have people leaving us and emigrating to other countries where people are more productively employed. There is less unemployment in the country, in countries like ours. And then these people make money and send money back to our country. I mean, I think there's, like, those remittances, etc. All that leads to greater wealth and prosperity all around. And to the host nation too, there are benefits, which we talked about. I think, like, you know, they also benefit with that. And also the people living there lead to expansion of their own economy too, because they've got like more young people leaving these countries and going there. So I think it's a good thing in all round, but it's not unusual for us to hear of this becoming quite a big political issue and in many countries, and immigrants being looked upon as with great suspicion and some disdain and sometimes even, like, you know, violence is directed at them. I don't want to spend too much time on some of these things. I think people know that, right? I mean, we talk about national identity. We talk about people's fear of lowering wages. These are not real, but, like, you know, there are these fears which do exist. And there's a suspicion of security. Suddenly, like, you know, everybody from a particular religion is looked upon as somebody from who's come there to, like, you know, hurt people or whatever. And these are all just false. I mean, I think the reality is people are just trying to make a better life for themselves. And while they're doing that, they also benefit the host country. And when people look at pluralism as a desirable outcome, they will welcome migration even more. But why do you think what is the need for all this migration from the host country? I understand, like, you know, some countries like India don't have enough jobs, people go. But why are there shortages, you think, in some of these other countries? And what do you think is the reason?
I think one reason that we have to keep in mind when we talk about India is, as a country, we have a very young population. We have a very large number of youth. And that is not necessarily the case with a lot of countries. Like, countries like Japan have a very high number of aging population, which means that every single year, more and more people are going out of the workforce, but not enough people are replacing them by entering the workforce. So aging population is one of the leading reasons for labor shortages that is being faced. Second is, every single day we notice the technology that people are operating with changing. The world is constantly evolving, and technology is one of the first things to change every single day. So what is, you know, high-tech technology today, it will probably be obsolete tomorrow. So in countries where this technological revolution is happening at a very fast pace, people aren't able to upskill themselves quickly enough to take up the job that require these new skills. So a lack of skills is one reason. The third reason could be, a lot of countries are now discovering newer resources on their land, which could go from minerals to new skills that their workers have to new capabilities. And this means that the workers that, or the jobs that are coming out of these industries, require new skills. It's quite possible that people in that country themselves don't have these skills, but those in other countries do. Or it's possible no one has these skills and it's time to train people to get ready for these jobs. And I think another reason I could think of more recently, especially with, you know, countries having such rapid growth, especially kinds of growth rates they haven't seen before, is their economy is expanding at a pace, unprecedented pace, so to speak, often they're not able to keep up with the demand for jobs. So there's a very high demand for jobs, but their population doesn't have sufficient supply to keep up with it. So I think those are the biggest reasons that I can think of as, you know, why countries are facing shortages today. But thinking about the reasons why their shortages exist, why do you think these gaps are not being filled? It's not like people haven't thought of immigrating before. We see so many people shifting to Dubai, to, you know, other countries like the US where they get high-skilled labor. But why is the large-scale movement of people not happening today to fill up these vacancies?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Rishi, and I think that's really where I think a crux of our discussion should really be focusing on. What can we do to make this easier? There are definite challenges to immigration. It's not that people don't want to go, right? I remember in my neighborhood, there was a plumber many years ago. And this plumber first met with some agent somewhere and somehow managed to find himself a job in Dubai. And once he went there, then he called his cousins and his brother and his brother-in-law and everybody, and they all went to Dubai as well. Then they came back after a couple of years, and then they met, and then they met with, like, a few other friends of theirs who said, hey, why don't you help me also find a job? And they helped those guys also too. They connected them with some people they knew. So it seems to be like a very personal network that helps people to find jobs Because people have had very bad experiences with agents who charge you a lot of money and then, like, you know, end up not getting you the jobs. So the first set of problems are people don't know where the jobs are, right? I mean, for instance, I was reading today that Belarus has got lots of interesting jobs. I mean, I would never even have considered Belarus as a potential location to go and live, right? So, I mean, there are people who have, but there are jobs there, right? So I think, like, you know, where are the jobs? I think if people can find a way by which, like, you know, you can have access and knowledge about where these jobs are available, how much can you expect to get paid for these jobs? I think today with the internet, a lot of information is more easily available. But, like, you know, if you look at some of the immigration, and if you said 2/3 of the immigration that happens are labor migrants, and they're not, like, you know, not all of them are very tech savvy, etc. But you should still find some way by which they can, I mean, if they can, they need to be able to provide it this, be provided this information in a more easy to digest form. So, like, how much, what, where are the jobs? What can I expect to be paid? How much does it cost to live there? Because their purpose of doing, going there is to, I mean, it might be like, maybe you'll go and earn £100,000 in London, but then London is an expensive city, and £100,000 after paying all those big taxes may not take you very far, right? So how do I apply for these jobs? And how do I fund myself for the first couple of months? I think that's another problem. For some people, I remember there was somebody I knew, and there was a lady I knew, she was like, you know, and she found that, like, there was, she needed to get jobs for her brother's sons. She had spoken to a carpenter who came to our house, and that carpenter said, yeah, sure, I can employ these two boys. I'll pay them some 10,000 rupees a month, and I'll give them a place to stay, and, like, you know, and also give them food to eat, right? It seemed like a very good deal for this family, because they lived in, like, you know, rural Chhattisgarh with hardly any jobs in sight and everything. And for them, like, you know, being able to earn an income of 10,000 rupees a month after food and accommodation is a lot by their standards, right? It sort of transforms their lives. But you know what happened? They actually missed the train when they were to come to Bangalore. They missed the train, but and they did not have enough money to buy another ticket. They just couldn't do it. So they just went back home. So even, like, you know, the potential of, like, for some people, the liquidity and the cost of capital is so high that somebody, just the very idea of being able to fund yourself for a couple of months in a foreign country, which is probably what is needed till you get your money, et cetera, and all that, that itself people don't have, right? Even that much money people don't have, and therefore they struggle. Then it's about the skills themselves. Like, let's say you find out that you need a certain skill in order to get a job in this country. Now, you may not have those exact skills. So how do you get that? How do you find out if your certifications that you've got in India are going to be valid and accepted in those countries? And then about language, that's another thing that sort of makes people a little afraid and wary of being able to move. How can I learn a new language? So, and then comes the whole issue of the local problems of visas and permits and taxation and, like, you know, and all that. And then you also hear some horror stories, right? Workers have gone from India, nurses go from here to the Middle East. And then, like, you feel that they're being exploited, their passports are taken away, they are treated very badly. And there's this fear that in a foreign country, you can't protect yourself against exploitation. You feel very weak and vulnerable. So I think these are all the challenges that people face, have to overcome in order to be able to emigrate. Not everybody has the stamina and the wherewithal to face these hurdles. So if India can, like, you know, if we want to honestly promote emigration, since we can't generate all the 20 million jobs that we need, and if we can, like, you know, even if we can take all the help we can get, right? So if we can get a couple of million people to emigrate every year, that'll add tremendous value to our country, right? The Indian diaspora today is, like, I think 28.5 million people or something, right? I think 17 million of them are NRIs. But if you add 2 million every year, that'll make a significant change, and it would make a huge impact to our economy and to people's lives. So shall we talk now, Arushi, about those changes that India can do to facilitate emigration? Do you want to go first and talk about a few ideas that you have?
Yeah, I think I'd love to do that. So I think one of the biggest ideas is something you've already hinted at. It's this information arbitrage that exists in the world that, you know, we're living in today, that there are countries that have very clear guidelines on immigration. There are countries that don't.
Yeah.
There are also some countries wherein we see that, you know, that the data is just not updated when it comes to job postings, whereas there are some countries that are constantly updating their data, or there are discrepancies in how this data is interpreted in the host country wherein we are there versus, you know, where our labor is going to go. So I think the bigger question or something that we have to work on is to try and bridge this information arbitrage gap. We need to come up with a system that allows us to consolidate all of these job postings, any information about immigration to countries where a lot of Indians are going, or where at least opportunities for these Indians exist. And we could do this using AI, especially using automation, and we could get this done with. And this would largely simplify the immigration process for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's great. And let's take a short break. And when we come back, let's continue talking about all the things that we can do to facilitate immigration and to promote. All right. Welcome back. So you were talking just now about some initial ideas on what we can do to facilitate immigration. You talked about jobs portal, if you will, right? And where use artificial intelligence for people to maybe look at job postings all over the world and identify the ones which seem to not get filled very quickly, and look at the kind of jobs that keep repeating in certain places. Compare them with maybe skills that are available in India and, like, you know, say, hey guys, I mean, these could be good opportunities for us, right? So I think, like, you know, having a nice jobs portal, jobs abroad info portal, right? So something like that would be great. What else did you think about? I mean, like, you know, what other things can we as a nation do?
I think the next thing is something we spoke about in another podcast. It's about upskilling people. So it's been noted that a lot of the migrant labor that moves out of India or in generally moves to another country tends to be more skilled, which means that if we're sending out labor and we want the countries we're sending this labor to accept them, we need to ensure that their skills match the demands of the job. And this is where our idea of upskilling people, you know, taking into consideration the market forces of demand and supply comes into play. We have to upskill our people to ensure that they're actually ready for the jobs they want to take up in a foreign country. I think the next thing that our country needs to do is we need to facilitate visas. Visas can be a very tricky process, especially for those who are from, you know, economically and socially weaker backgrounds. They might not have the capital that you need to present up front to be able to get a visa. They might not have living accommodations as of yet. So if we're able to sign MOUs with countries, as have been done, like Japan has a lot of MOUs, there are other countries that have MOUs with each other that promote large-scale immigration. If India could sign some of these MOUs to ensure a constant flow of migrants into these countries to fill up the vacancies that these countries have, that would be a very big step that could, you know, make the visa process easier. And I think the last thing that comes to my mind is we need to ensure that there's a sense of community that exists. Now, if a person's migrating to a completely different country where they don't have their family, their support system, something that probably could help them is having some people who understand what they're going through. Now, this could be people who come from the same Indian diaspora. This could be other migrants. But ensuring that there is some sort of bridge program for these people to ensure that they're not alone, that there is someone out there who understands them, which really is important, because moving to a new place, you could be bogged down with a lot of mental health problems, and this could help out with that.
Yeah, that would be very interesting, Arushi. I think it's interesting that you mentioned that. When I was in my previous company, we had every time anybody joined, you always had a buddy, right? You were always buddied up with someone else. And it would be someone who's been with the organization for a while, who probably is of a similar level as you, but it could be somebody who's not also. But the point is that, you know, that person helps you to understand what are the various things that you need to do, right from like knowing where the gym in the office building is, to, like, you know, what's good at the cafeteria and what's not, what not to eat, or like, you know, what are better times to avoid using the elevator, right? So I think things like that, you need somebody who can tell you and just makes your life so much easier. So if we can have a nice buddy program, international buddy program created, which supported by the government of India, and, like, you know, which can help in making life so much easier for those people who emigrate, right? I think there are also some practical aspects to things. I mean, I think there's about making sure that, I think the government already does some things around the need for certain agents to register with the government, with the external affairs ministry, etc. And, like, to be able to provide, to make sure that agents don't take people for a ride. Then there is also things like the double taxation treaty, which we have with many countries. If we can have them with those countries which have these job skill shortages, that would help. Also, just like we talked about cultural engagement and people wanting pluralism, I think we must talk to people who are going abroad and promote plural and tell them to go and enjoy the difference, right? Not just like go there and say, okay, don't forget India and all that. Of course, they shouldn't and they won't. But I think it's also important that they go in and, like, you know, integrate with the host country, enjoy and, like, appreciate what the host country has to offer, and not just look at the differences, but actually enjoy the difference, right? So I think, like, if we can send people who go in there with that kind of mindset, then the chances that our people will be accepted in the host nation is also higher, right? So I think that would be a good thing for us to do. And also other things, right? I mean, I think simple things like making sure that the law protects you. There's somebody who's, like, there's some registration of people who have gone there. So you sort of keep a tab on them, make sure that they're all right. Have some kind of insurance system going so that in case of trouble, they're able to fly back, or they get a little safety net when things are not going all right for some time. So if we can do some of these things, I think we can definitely hope to increase the number of people who emigrate and reduce the demand for jobs in India. So I think that would be great. That's what I think. What else do you think? What is your sort of, there are some programs. Do you want to talk about some programs that some of these countries have? You talked about a guest worker program in some countries and all that. You want to talk about that?
I think so, yeah, just building up on what you said. So guest worker programs are nothing but temporary labor migration programs. They aim to add workers to the work, migrant workers to this host country's labor force only temporarily. So it is mandated that if a person is going under this program, their contract will be for a certain set amount of time and they will have to return back to their home country after that. So the problem with these programs, however, as they exist today, is that there are a lot of loopholes for worker exploitation. This could be especially amongst, you know, the lower skilled workers who fall, you know, prey to all of these smaller companies that hire them, that don't pay them even the minimum wage that they're supposed to be guaranteed in the host country, that don't provide them with the kind of support that they're supposed to be providing them, and they're just exploited.
And I think that's one of the things that we should do, right? So I think while we're talking about some of the ideas, I think one of those ideas is definitely that the workers who go there to another country should look at our embassy and the people around there and the people who, maybe an extended arm of it, where they can hope to find some succor in times of trouble, right? A place where they can turn to first for some help and support, some place where they can find a shoulder to cry on at least, right? So I think that'll make a huge difference. That's good. Yeah, and I think, like, you know, we talked about these new skills, and I think that's very interesting, Arushi, because I think I was reading that more than 90 million workers in India or globally might need to develop significantly new skills within their current roles, right? And many of people may have to leave jobs where there are declining opportunities. So I think this whole idea of developing new skills and staying relevant gets a whole new meaning when you include the complexity of jobs and opportunities in other countries. I think that's what it is, really. I think a large number of people will need large number of countries will continue to need people. Countries like India, with a young population, can definitely work hard towards filling those vacancies. I think there is, in the last couple of decades, there's been an increasing trend of nationalism and some sort of objections and pushback against immigration. But I think in the long run, it is the right thing to do. And we need to do all that we can to make this happen. It was very nice talking to you on this subject, Arushi. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was great talking to you as well.
Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach Podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.